morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and I want to remind everybody that Ed Dames last night, his website did not fall down. It was taken down. It was hacked, in fact, beyond repair. Fortunately, tonight, Ed has sort of a secondary website up that has just the information that you really need. It doesn't contain the kind of detailed information that he had on his other website. Nevertheless, it's got the main information up there. And if you go to my website, artbell.com, and go to What's New, you'll see a link to his website with the information promised last night and delivered tonight, unless you got in very, very early before it was taken down. And boy, it was taken down, too. Coming up in a few moments, Sean David Morton, a traditional guest on this program now for years and years. And I like to say of Sean that he has more hits than any mafia don you've ever heard about, and he really does. We'll ask him about the big one that he either hit or missed, and I don't think he hit it, but then again, I don't read his newsletter as frequently as I ought to, so there may be information there that I'm not sure about. One of our nation's great psychics coming up shortly, Sean David Morton. Stay right where you are. Since studying at the British International School in Cairo, Egypt, then Stanford, and graduating from USC with majors in political science and fine art, Sean David Morton has been an investigative journalist, writer, director, producer for TV and films, is a renowned futurist, psychic, and earth-sensitive, with many of his stunning and startling predictions made on this show since he first appeared with me back in 1991. Sean was instrumental in bringing Area 51 to international attention and was one of the original writer, producer, on-camera investigators for UPN's Strange Universe, where he did the first national stories on the Chupacabra, remember that, and the UFO contactee Case of Adrian. He has written, produced, and consulted for Sightings, Now It Can Be Told, Hard Copy, and Unsolved Mysteries. While at Hard Copy, Sean produced the first national news segments on the Phoenix Lights and the conspiracy theories behind the death of Lady Diana Spencer. Also wrote the first national articles on the cover-ups behind the deaths of Diana and JFK Jr. Sean studied with the Dalai Lama in India, lived as a monk in Nepal, where he studied with the Black Hat Buddhist sect. It was there he learned meditative techniques that enhanced his own psychic abilities, allowed him to get in tune with the earth, induce visions, read maps, predict geologic events, and taught him to travel the time stream. While in college, he also trained in remote viewing, currently is teaching his spiritual remote viewing techniques in seminars around the country. His track record of predicting earth changes, catastrophes, economic trends, the stock market, and political events have been nothing short of astounding, bringing him international recognition. As a way to bring his visions to the world, in 1993, Sean David Morton started the Prophecy Research Institute, has been the publisher and editor of the international monthly magazine, the Delphi Associates Newsletter, available by private subscription only. You'll hear about that. It is the nation's foremost publication of prophecy, prediction, and phenomenology. The Delphi Associates newsletter motto is Tomorrow's Headlines Today. And here is Sean David Morton. Sean, hi.
Hi. Thank you so much, Art. It's just been great, inspiring listening to you over the last hour or so. There's been, so much emotion in people. Is it just me, or are we both hearing sort of a new depth in the American psyche and the American character over the last few weeks?
Well, we are a changed nation, Sean. Something did change. Everybody's talking about getting back to normal, and I suppose in one sense we all have to try and get back to normal lives to some degree, but it's never going to be the way it was again. Something basic and profound changed for America on that day, and it's always going to remain. We're going to remain changed. Listen, I guess I want to know, everybody wants to know, and the big question I get, in fact, days after it, people would send me emails, Sean, saying, hey, what happened to the psychics? Why didn't we get any warning of this? Where were all the psychics on this? And so that's an obvious question to ask you.
Well, I guess the best way to answer that would be that, and anybody that wants to go up on the website, my website's DelphiAssociates.org, which is pretty well known, I've been talking about this exact series of events unfolding since way back in 1992 when I put my first manuscript together, The Millennium Factor, And then this exact event specifically on hard copy all the way back in November of November 17th of 1995.
What exactly did you say?
I said specifically, I think you are going to see a nuclear attack on New York City. Get out of the way because something is coming. There will be a series of terrorist attacks on New York City in the next couple of years and chemical warfare attacks on Washington, D.C. There will be a series of terrorist attacks on New York City in the next couple of years, chemical warfare attacks on Washington, D.C. I see in New York like a white snow that falls on the entire city. Much of the city has been evacuated, but theirs, and then I stumble on my words there, it's like a sphere that explodes like the sun. And then I comment that it's very tough predicting the future because if you're right, nobody likes you. If you're wrong, nobody respects you. And that long-range predictions have become virtually useless because of everything that can literally change in the twinkling of an eye.
Okay, and you said all this exactly when?
November 17th of 1995 on hard copy.
On hard copy.
And then on the day, this is a quote from New York City eyewitness who said, quote, "It's like a bizarre snow day with everything closed and shut down, but there is no joy. It's like everything here is covered with snow, but it's not the good kind." That was the major thing that I saw in these attacks around the turn of the century. And this is probably one of the most powerful, and I'm not going to bore you with this because all I can say is that I go to New York twice a year. I give lectures in New York, and over and over and over again, I pound on the lecture saying, New York City is going to be the trigger. There is going to be a series of attacks on New York City that is going to begin the next phase of our history, which is going to be a war with the Islamic jihads. This is something that I've been saying since 1992.
Now, that I know you've said.
In 94.
Right.
And very specifically, this is and what we did today is we put this up on the website, on the DelphiAssociates.org website, and I took everything that I could find in the archives, and actually I'm still going through the tapes of you and I. I'm actually still going through the New York lecture tapes of things that I said specifically, talking about a terrorist attack on New York City. The biggest vision I had of this was of this immense white cloud that just covered the entire area. And of course, that was the most, for me, that was the most striking image, was this, the fallout that looks like snow. And of
course, it was an image that endures, still endures, really, but endured for a long, long, long time.
Yeah, well, and actually, we'll get into that later on in the conversation about what exactly that stuff is and how I think that outside of about 6,000 people or so that were killed in the World Trade Center, that the health ramifications of what's going to go on because of that white cloud that came out of the World Trade Center are going to be much more long-lasting, I think. I think this is probably one of the most interesting and most shocking things, and I think probably would be the most interest to you and to the audience. Back in 1994, in August of 1994, I guess what you would call a post-life progression. You've probably heard a lot of people like Dr. Moody, you know, who's worked a lot with Daniel Brinkley as an example, people who do hypnotic post-life regressions to find out past lives, etc.
Right.
And I did, I guess what you would call, there's a Tibetan technique that is technically referred to as a soul transference. And the best way for me to describe it is it's like a post-life progression. And what I wanted to do is that I wanted to go to approximately 100 years in the future, and this is 1994, and look back on what I saw as being the history of America and the world. And the only way I can describe this is that I literally changed places with myself for a very brief period of time and actually had myself from the future come back and speak to a crowd of about 700 people or so. I had no recollection of what I said. I listened to the tape later. All I remember doing is waking up on a farm somewhere in Omaha and running around this guy's house in the middle of the night, you know, freaking everybody out. But this is what was interesting. What he said specifically, and this is August 17th of 1994, we, the old USA, had great military force and might, but with the destruction of the computer databases and the financial system of the old New York by the pulse of a near miss of a nuclear missile, and later by flood and the destruction of what was then the capital of Washington, D.C., by an unusual biologic weapon, I think the conclusion was that the weapon was something called red mercury, as it was atomic, but also with biologic effects, like a very dirty radioactive bomb. But I do not understand such things. When the two cities were both destroyed, and then a few years after the great age turning, he was specifically talking about right around the year 2000, 2001, and then a series of attacks after that, none of the other countries, the states, would come to their aid. There was only minor retaliation due to great confusion as to who the perpetrators actually were, so revenge was difficult. And this specifically talks about, he goes on at great length where he talks about this last great war where there were great forces allied against each other, primarily China and what he calls the Islamic Jihads. Although there were, and I'll quote again, although there were a number of factions, and I know the great overview of this because even though so many of the records were lost, I remember the beginning of the war started when many people began to be murdered in India and Israel, and it had to do with, and we still even have this in our history, and this is something that may take place very soon, when Pakistan attacked India with troops and limited nuclear weapons. This was the beginning of the last great conflict, and the conflict did not occur all at once. It spanned nearly 27 of your old standard years. It lasted from 6 years from your dating of 1998, when the rumblings and skirmishes started, until about 2025 to 2027, when the smaller battles were winding down. The great wars began primarily as a final conflict between China, between the Islamic Jihad, and between Europe, the United States, and Russia. And he talks very specifically, or in this conversation, talks very specifically about a character, and we'll talk later on about this because we've got a lot of other things to cover, but talks very specifically about another character that's going to be coming up out of Iran, that Saddam and Osama, even though they are, I guess you would call them, kind of wind-ups for the main Antichrist character, that there is a third player on the scene that we're going to find maybe a mastermind behind a lot of the things that are about to occur that is specifically going to come out of Iran. And this relates a little bit to, great part and parcel to a lot of the Nostradamus quatrains that talk about very specifically his description of the three great antichrists, and of course this last great antichrist.
There's a great deal of Nostradamus nonsense going on the internet.
Right.
I had John Hogue debunking some of that on the show. What do you know of Nostradamus that is specifically relevant to what has happened or is about to?
This is exclusive because this is one of the things that we were just going over today. I was talking to Robert Egan, who is still not feeling very well. I'm not sure how much longer he's going to be around. Because Robert's had cancer now for about the last year or so. But he's one of the great Nostradamus minds. And he and I get together and we go through words and we look up things in the old English dictionaries and different languages, etc. Let me first give you the overview because I think we've got some specifics here that I think are exclusive and I think are something that nobody's looking at. And
right.
It's actually, there's one quatrain that we actually found that, oddly enough, may in some ways actually play out what Ed Dames was actually talking about last night. Let me point out the overview first. The overview of this was, first, is that Nostradamus saw three great Antichrist figures. The one he gives the most attention to, and I think he's got something like 60 quatrains where he talks about his career and where he comes from and very specific, is Napoleon Bonaparte. And, of course, because Napoleon was French and affected the French Empire and, of course, came from Italy and brought France to a pinnacle of might and power, you know, Nostradamus being the chauvinistic Frenchman that he is, talks probably the most about Napoleon and gave us a name for Napoleon. As a matter of fact, misspelled Napoleon's name. And if you actually go to France and look at the tomb of Napoleon, Napoleon's name is misspelled on his tomb, exactly the way Nostradamus misspells it in his quatrain, which is really stunning.
It is interesting.
The second great Antichrist, and this is one of the things that is also shored out by what I believe is the time coding of the Great Pyramids, is that the second great Antichrist would be Hitler. The Great Pyramid has a very interesting Antichrist angle, which is an inverted pyramid angle in the sacred geometry that is exactly the opposite of the Christ angle in the pyramid, which occurs from approximately September 27th of 2 BC, and then goes to April 15th of 33 AD.
And the third Antichrist?
The third Antichrist, according to the Great Pyramid, there isn't really a third Antichrist. The Great Pyramid simply says that the center doesn't hold, that basically humanity falls apart under the weight of its own stupidity, that everything just sort of starts hitting the wall and hitting the fan, so to speak. What Nostradamus describes, describing Hitler or Hister, as he actually describes him in the quatrain, and,
right.
And of course your audience is all familiar with all this stuff. The third guy, he doesn't ever really nail down. He talks about he gives us really maddening and kind of frightening clues. He talks about Mabus, M-A-B-U-S, which is actually a French term which means terror in the night, which occurs at the beginning of a quatrain. So we don't know if it's a proper name or if it's a term for night terror or literally terrorism. Of course, there's the old trick where you write M-A-B-U-S down on a piece of paper and you pull it up in a mirror, and the B then becomes a D, and it actually comes out Saddam, which is kind of interesting, a little parlor game in Nostradamus' time. He also talks about the man in the blue turban, which means that this individual will be a holy man of some kind who will be considered a cleric. And, of course, it's the clerics now who run Afghanistan and run most of Iran and the Islamic, the Shiite fundamentalist radical countries. But he talks about the man in the blue turban, Mabus, the barbarian prince, the Persian prince, he mentions a couple of times. When he talks about the king of terror also and the return of the king of the Mongols, which could also be actually translated as Moguls as well. And, of course, the Persians were the Mogul emperors who invaded much of the Middle East, Afghanistan, Pakistan, the northern part of India. So this third guy, if it's an actual individual, or is it a group of people who actually all come together? My visions of this have always been that I saw one man who came out of, and they were my two very strong visions. Back in 1992, I worked with a friend of mine, lived down the street, who was a police artist, and I had this pounding vision in my head of a face that I kept seeing being responsible for a series of terrorist attacks against the United States in 1999, 2000, 2001, that we would wage a war against. And it is my belief, when I finally saw his face, and then I printed the picture that I'd had drawn, and his face right next to each other, and you can also see this on the website as well, is that it is, in my opinion, it's Osama bin Laden was the face that I continued to see. And back in, I'll read a quote that I made back in 1999 that says very specifically about what's happening. But I think that Osama's going to be martyred, if you will, and I still think that there's another character, that there's going to be a series of actions that the United States is going to take that is going to bind Islam together, that the Iranians are still, you know, they've been very, very quiet through this whole thing, but I think the Iranians are financially and certainly philosophically behind pretty much everything that's going on.
All right. Hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour. There is one question that I want to ask with respect. He did see and say a lot that would indicate that he saw some of this coming. What I do want to ask, though, is why wasn't there a short-term warning? In other words, as this event drew very close, why wasn't the psychic shock from it enough to make people call me up and say, all right, I got to get on the air right now? This is Coast to Coast AM. Nation's great psychics, Sean David Morton, is my guest, and he'll be back in just a moment. Good evening, everybody. If you'd like to do as I'm doing right now and go to my website and then look at tonight's guest, Sean David Morton, click on his site, you will see a variety of things, like hard copy, for example, air date November 17th of 95, when he talked about what was going to happen to the Big Apple. It's all there. He's laid it all out. But I do have one critical question coming up. Well, all right, let me read this to you. I'm on Sean's page myself now. This is from the Delphi Associates newsletter, Volume 5, Issue 55, September 30th, 1999. Osama bin Laden. In my own visions, I kept seeing a face so strongly that I worked with my friends police sketch artist Steve Hill, who lived down the street from me, to make sure I got it right. I saw this man clearly as he was at that time in 1992. I felt he would be on the front page of every paper in the world around 2000, taking credit for blowing up planes, buildings, and even poisoning entire cities. That face, as you can see here, was Osama bin Laden, the royal Saudi Arabian multimillionaire who has become the global financier for Islamic terrorism. So by God, he did say that, and there's a lot more up there. But my question remains, Sean, you know, how come with this thing so imminent prior to September 11th, how come the psychic shock immediate to come would not have been, should it not have been so strong that something should have washed over you or some of the other great psychics of the world, and I interview most of the great ones, including you, and nobody called me up and said, God, Art, I've got to get onto the air right now because I see something happening next week, or, you know, something along those lines. You certainly have seen this, though you saw it much earlier.
Well, the only way that I can answer this is, it's what I try to explain to people is that the angels speak to me, and it goes through the massive goo that passes through my brain, and once information is kind of digested and ingested, it comes out the other end not looking too pretty, as they say.
So there is not necessarily then, when a big incident is immediately pending, there's not necessarily something that invades the goo of your brain and says, there you are.
Well, how can I explain how this happens?
Yeah, that would probably be the best thing. Explain how it happens.
This would be the best way to look at it. I through the entire month of July and most of August, I myself, people that I was communicating with in New York, were nervous wrecks. Couldn't sleep, couldn't eat, horrible dreams, sobbing, anger. I mean, just sitting in corners or closets crying for no particular reason at all. It was the same thing. I had two things happen to me that were similar before this happened. Before the Oklahoma City bombing, about two or three days before that, I had this horrible pain in my chest for days. Once again, as if my heart was being ripped out by some event that was coming. The same thing happened a few days before Princess Diana. I felt literally like racking sobs across my chest. I felt this weight on my shoulders that felt as if the entire world was crying, sobbing, literally in mourning. The entire month of July and August, I'd written a number of people on my email list and said to them, you know, there's an event coming that after August, I just get the feeling that nothing is going to be the same, that everything is going to change. There's going to be an event so great, everything's going to change. When you're traveling down the time stream, you have to, it's like Yoda says, the future is always in motion. But it's more accurate to say that the future is always emotion. So what happens is that when you have one of these great events, and remember also that there is that any of these people who are psychic, who are sensitive, who have visions of the future, I mean, in no way, shape, or form do I claim to be God, do I claim to be omniscient, do I claim to have some, I have a power and ability that I have developed over many years that I feel that anybody has, that I go out and I teach people how to develop their own abilities. And in my saying, I mean, with Osama bin Laden and my going to New York and my saying, look, the trigger for this great Islamic war is going to be this attack on New York City.
You did say it.
And I see this cloud of snow over the entire city. And I just feel the...
No, that's also clear, Sean. My only question was, as an event gets very close, is there additional psychic pressure to be seen if you go look?
All I can tell you, Art, is that sometimes these ripples come back in the time stream from like a great rock that's placed in the time stream, and it's like you can feel it as you're going down the time stream in your canoe, if you will. And it is so much easier to feel emotions and to feel pain and sorrow and things that ripple backwards than it is to get specific visual images of what happens. It's like, let me give you the classic example of this. When I teach remote viewing, and I go into the spiritual remote viewing, it's very interesting for me because men, usually when I'm teaching something and I'm trying to get them to get an essence of a target that they're trying to hit, men will see things more visually. They'll see geometric shapes. They'll be able to draw lines and certain things out.
Mm-hmm.
Women sometimes feel, and this is a very interesting balance between the sexes, women feel as though they're remote viewing inside of a dark room, that what happens with them is that they feel things happening. They'll, like, for example, you know, one of the images that I use occasionally is I've got a, you know, a white fluffy cat that sits up on a, on the image that sits up on a lifeguard stand out of the beach where I live. So the men will actually draw kind of the lifeguard stand in the ocean, whatever, whereas the women will have the physical experience of feeling the sand and feeling wind and breathing the air. So it's an interesting thing about how the sexes actually see different things. When you're trying to spot an event like this, the only thing you're really getting is it's almost as if the rock itself, to go back to the time stream analogy, that the rock itself is kind of underneath the, just underneath the surface tension of the water, and you're getting the ripples that are coming back as you're heading towards this great event, this great milestone in history. And remember, too, that there are, and this has happened to me on a number of occasions, and I've talked to you about this as we've gone on through the years, that sometimes when I do my viewing, I'll have beings stop me and simply say, go no further, that there are certain things that human beings are just not allowed to know and not allowed to see.
All right, well, let's get in the canoe and go up the time stream for a moment here.
Okay.
Was it really Osama bin Laden behind this act? Can you tell us that, or was it some other? Have we made some mistake? What do you know about the responsibility here?
Well, here's the biggest problem with what's going on. I mean, I know everybody wants to go out and they want to kick ass and they want to do all these things. We have managed to narrow the blame to a section, and I'll just tell you the obvious, of Osama bin Laden's network, the Al-Qaeda network, which actually is Arabic for the base, by the way. The problem is bin Laden only offers general training, maybe some weapons. He writes people a check, which is basically kind of grant money, and then gives them the blessings of Allah, and then he sends them off on their merry way to cause whatever mischief they can come up with. And, you know, the villains are always so much easier to deal with in the James Bond and Austin Powers movies. Now, you know, if Osama only had a white Persian cat he was petting while laughing maniacally, we would know he was buying this whole thing. But Al-Qaeda, as you know, better than anybody, is a conglomerate of groups that is spread out throughout the world operating as this network, and it has a global reach, with presences in Algeria, Egypt, Morocco, Turkey, Jordan, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, you know, all those Stan countries up above Afghanistan, you know, where Stan kind of gets around, Syria, Zhejiang in China, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Malaysia, all over the world. The idea here being is that for Osama bin Laden to be a guy who's out there living in a cave with, 50 hardcore followers and maybe an army of about 700, to go from very, very crude truck bombs, and, you know, taking a rubber boat full of explosives and, you know, bumping it up against the USS Cole, to a core group of suicidal terrorists who come into this country and train for the better part of 3 or so years or so, take flight training at various military flight schools, and then carry this out. I mean, you know, that's, we have to remember that you know, our enemy has the eye of the tiger. Our enemy.
Are you saying then that it was Osama bin Laden perhaps at some level, but it's more?
Yeah, because it's a far-flung network. What all he does is the terrorists go to him, train at his camp in various terrorist techniques. And remember, both Osama bin Laden and Sheikh Ramallah, who was the fellow who tried to blow up the World Trade Center in 1993, were both trained by the CIA as part of the Mujahideen. And unfortunately, the CIA was actually training and arming the people who were giving the Russians the worst time, according to during the Afghan War back in the late 70s and 80s. But, of course, those guys who were giving the Russians the worst time were also the guys who happened to be the most anti-American. And, of course, the Mujahideen then, unfortunately, then became the Taliban, which are the guys that we're having the most trouble with.
That's right.
The idea behind this is that I still think that Osama bin Laden, even though he's being put up as being the main bad guy, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't go after him, and I'm not saying that we should not respond with savage force to this kind of attack on our soil. I mean, we cannot mess around with these people. And the time we should have gone after this guy was when he blew up our embassies in Africa. That's when we should have been going after this guy. You wouldn't have seen maybe this terror that happened in New York if we'd gone after his ass then. If he'd gone after the USS Cole and we went after him the same way we're going after him now, I mean, we should have been doing this stuff a year or so ago.
Well, I sure agree with that.
And Clinton wouldn't do it. You know, and you know, he destroyed most of our network, and if you remember also, one other thing that I wanted to point out here, I mean, not to pin blame on anybody, but remember when it was the whole wag the dog scenario, when Monica Lewinsky was making her announcement about what our fun-loving president did to her in her Kmart blue dress,
mm-hmm.
and Clinton manufactured some kind of outrage and blew up this baby milk factory in Afghanistan.
Yes,
remember that?
I recall, yeah.
And, of course, Osama bin Laden came out and said, I'm looking for volunteers to go against the United States because he had some relatives who were killed in his blast. We find out that it was not a munitions factory. They were making Alka-Seltzer, aspirin, and baby formula.
All right.
And of course, this has sort of come back to bite us in the butt because 100,000 Afghans at that time volunteered for this terrorist jihad that Osama bin Laden then declared.
I wonder what kind of advice the president was getting about specifically what he really should do when he hit that factory.
I don't know. Get your name off the front page of the papers. You know.
All right. So anyway, to pin this down, Osama did have something to do with this, but you're imagining more. What more?
There's a greater network out there. And once again, my gut feeling on this is the guy we're going to find responsible is going to come out of Iran. And this is not just the Nostradamus quatrains and my looking at his overview of history. I think the Iranians are behind this. And I think we're going to make, I think in what you're about to see happen, and I could lay out exactly the military strategy.
I want you to lay it out for me. Are we going to kill bin Laden?
I think so. I think it's going to happen relatively quickly.
All right. A lot of people want to know, and I want to know, is where is this war going? Are we looking down the barrel of World War III? Is this going to escalate into some gigantic battle between the Islamic world and the Christian world? What's going to happen?
Well, if you want the military scenario for what's going on, I mean, we've already shipped the 82nd and 101st Airborne Divisions, or nearly half of our airborne combat forces, which are at the immediate disposal of the president, are being airlifted to bases in Pakistan as we speak. The flag's going to go up on October 16th. I want you to remember that date, because October 16th is going to be the big day I can see it now. George Bush is going to get up on TV and going to say, we will unleash hell. And I think that this is what's going to go on, because the bulk of these forces are now going to be moved to the northern Punjab region of Pakistan and take up positions near the city of Dera Ismail and in the valleys at the foot of the Suleiman mountain range across from their main target, which is the Afghan city of right now. The main target is not Kabul. It's actually Kandahar. And the U.S. Mm-hmm. is going to lay siege or capture the Afghan cities of Meden, Galak, Maruf, as well as the Afghanistan Valley, where our intelligence is telling us, and this is provided to us by the Russians, and India and Israel, that Osama bin Laden is actually hiding in this valley now. And he's dug in. He's dug tunnels. He's dug caves. But that his forces have been concentrated in this valley over the last few months.
All right, so you're saying the flag goes up October 16th. We will indeed remember that.
Okay.
And you're saying we will take and hold, occupy those cities, and we will apparently go after Osama from that stronghold we established.
Yeah, and that's not all, because the Turks are going to be with us, NATO's going to be with us, England's going to be with us, and the Turkish army is in a state of war alert now. And there are various sources that add that the Turkish army is poised along the border with the Kurdish northern border of Iraq. We're in the process of arming, again, the Kurdish rebels who are going to work with the Turks. So we're talking about a pronged attack here where we're not only going to go after Afghanistan, but go after northern Iraq at the same time.
Wow.
So, I mean, this is not going to be a minor conflict, but the United States understands that the 200 Taliban fighters who now arrived in the United States in mid-July, which puzzled a lot of observers, were in fact members of bin Laden's general staff. They were pulled out of Afghanistan 2 months earlier as part of his preparations for the 9/11 terror attacks in New York and Washington, and there will be quarries of the U.S. and Turkish forces that are going to hunt in one prong into a thrust into Iraq, and then there's going to be a simultaneous attack, a second attack, which will be spearheaded in the Basra area by about 30,000 British soldiers, which are currently being airlifted into bases in Oman, once again, as we speak. So this is not, we are not messing around. We are sending the Kitty Hawk. We're sending the Ronald Reagan. We've got nuclear submarines there. We've basically the HMS Intrepid, a whole fleet of British Marines. We're working with the Pakistanis here. I mean, this is, we're not messing around with these people, and we shouldn't be. We, as I said, this is, all these people who say, oh, it's going to be so horrible, there's going to be a lot of collateral damage that's going to go on. If you understand how these tribes work, if if you're the head of you know, the Mughala tribe, and I'm the head of the Morton tribe, and somebody of my tribe kills somebody of your tribe, my tribe has the blood obligation to basically go over and wipe out every man, woman, and child in your tribe. None of this eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. You kill everybody. They understand that. And what's going to happen is that if we are seen to be weak in this particular case, and we have a unique, I think, historic opportunity here, and there may be people out there who I think have a handle or an understanding of some of these prophecies, because if we don't get these guys now, Art, we are talking about nuclear attacks on our cities, biological attacks on our cities, smallpox attacks on our cities, Spanish flu attacks. I mean, they will unleash hell here one way or another.
Sean, with the hell that you just described that we're about to unleash, what is the rest of the Islamic world going to do? That's a pretty open, important question.
Well, right now, they're pretty much behind us. I mean, if we've got... But let me tell you the tenuous situation. The mistake is that the Shiite Muslims are the ones that are the radicals, and they go back to they believe that the Ba'ath Sunni Muslims killed their particular disciple of Muhammad, and this all happened like 1600 years ago, and to them it's like the day before yesterday. The radical Shiites control, obviously, are the Mujahideen, Iran, about 80% of the population of Iraq, about 97% of the population of Saudi Arabia. And the United States, very wisely, I might add, has kept the Saudi royal power, the Saudi royal family in power, Saddam Hussein in power, because Saddam is a Ba'ath Sunni. And, of course, remember, Saddam was our pal in the 1980s when he was fighting a war against the Iranians.
Absolutely.
So when suddenly that war ended, and then we decided that we needed a bad guy in the Middle East as an excuse to keep our military there to, of course, protect our oil, and we then turned on Saddam, and of course Saddam asked us six times whether or not he can invade Kuwait through our ambassador April Glaspie, and our response was, we have no business in Arab-Arab conflicts. You go right ahead. And then George Bush the first.
Well, I don't know if we said go right ahead. I think we did say it's essentially not our business.
Not our business, yeah. Right? And when he did it, we were all surprised. And of course, what Saddam was doing is that the Kuwait used to be part of Iraq for 3,000 years up until it was divided into a separate emirship by the British in 1959, and they were slant drilling underneath the border into the Iraqi oil fields,
which
they'd gone into the world court. That's why they lit all the oil fields on fire on their way out. Saddam is the only, I hate to say this because he's such a bad guy, but he's the only stabilizing influence in that area.
And that's why we keep him there. That's why we didn't go in and finish the job off, because we were afraid of what might come next.
We destabilized the whole country. The Shiites would take over Iraq. They would team up with the Iranians. They would foment revolution in Saudi Arabia. If they get rid of the Saudi royal family and Saudi Arabia goes Shiite, I'm telling you, they got us by the cojones. And when they start squeezing by cutting off our oil, there's going to be a lot of Americans screaming to turn this entire place into a parking lot and just, you know, green glass from Pakistan over.
All right, Sean, hold it right there. We're at the top of the hour. We will be right back. I'm Art Bell.
I don't want a lonely mansion with a tear in every room. All I want is the love you promised.
Goes up October 16th, according to Sean. Very specific information, and I want to nail down more specific information. Sean, with respect to what kind of war we're facing, is it going to be, in your estimation, a wider war? In other words, are we really getting in for more than we're bargaining for? A lot of Americans think we're going to go into Afghanistan, take care of Osama bin Laden, and maybe there'll be more sporadic sort of through the years as we go after terrorists, or are we biting off a pretty big bite here? Is it going to be Islam against?
Well, all I can tell you is what we're winding up for now. I mean, I've said this since 92 and then again in 94 and, you know, all through the 90s. that the next great war, the war of the 21st century, was very specifically going to be the Islamic Jihad versus the United States and Europe. I said even with one of the major quotes that I made, and this was on February 21st of 2001, this is up on the website, when I said about George Bush that, of course, foreign affairs also means war, war, war. I told you even before this man was elected that he would be drenched in blood. He surrounded himself with the hawkish warlords from his daddy's administration. Desert Storm 2 is just now getting started, and it will get bloody on both sides. I also then said that Bush truly believes that he has a mission, or he believes that his presidency will be a holy crusade. And those are the exact words that George Bush used about five days ago, where he said that he felt that this was, that he called it a crusade. Of course, the worst thing he could have said.
All right, so then the answer really is a wider war.
Because I think it's going to be a three-pronged attack. I think we're not only going after the Afghans, but I think we're going after Iraq. I think that what we're gearing up for specifically is going to be, even if the U.S. military actions in Afghanistan and Iraq are successful, and there's no real guarantee that they will be, bin Laden and the most powerful group, not just the Iranians who are financing, but it's the Egyptian Islamic Jihad, which has a lot of the money, and they'll still have large pockets at their command in Yemen, Bosnia, Kosovo, Albania, Macedonia, and a lot of former Soviet Muslim republics. And the largest contingent of bin Laden-funded Islamic extremist fighters are deployed in a place called the Faranga Valley. The other problem is, too, is that this war now opens up the potential for a whole series of nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. And U.S. leaders have emphasized since Friday night that the United States will employ its entire arsenal in this campaign. And even Tony Blair, the British Prime Minister, stood up and said the danger the West faces from terror attacks could include nuclear, chemical, biological weapons, which you've been talking about on your show for years. Israel has also voiced very strong support for the formation of an anti-terror coalition, what they're calling the Homeland Defense cabinet seat that Bush has now put together. But at this stage, the Bush administration prefers to bring in Syria, which means that they want to exclude Israel from a lot of the coalition because they're afraid that if they include Israel, then they're going to not be able to use their bases in Saudi Arabia, and they've got to get Damascus on board.
If you were to include Israel, then if you include Israel, it really does allow for the possibility then of Islamic general holy war against the West, which is exactly what you say you see coming, if I'm listening to you correctly. Let me go backwards for a moment. You mentioned that horrible cloud that's been hanging over New York City, and we didn't get to the health repercussions. You said you would discuss that. What kind of health repercussions?
Well, I sent you a, if you get a chance to put it up on your site, I'm not even sure if it went through on the email or not, but I sent you a picture that was taken, a weather satellite photo from space of this cloud around New York City that was caused by the collapse of the World Trade Center.
Yeah, I think we've all seen it.
It stretches, I don't know how many hundreds of miles around in a circle around New York, Pennsylvania, stretches all the way up to like Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest danger of this is that the World Trade Centers, and have you ever been inside the World Trade Centers?
Never.
I have a lot of friends who actually did work in the World Trade Center, and I've been in there a couple of times on offices. They actually all got out. They were on the lower floors. But, I mean, I was on, like, the 72nd floor of the World Trade Center at a friend of mine's office when I was visiting New York a few years ago. And, I mean, when the wind blows, this building sways back and forth. It's like being in the middle of an earthquake. And I'm like, my God, a good swift kick could knock this thing over. And they said, let me show you something. And they showed me a little bit about the construction of the Trade Center, that it's built on sort of a central core that's then designed to sway and give a certain amount of degree of leeway either way.
Right.
But the whole rest of the building is, they call it cantilevering, and it's cantilevered out. It's like a whole stack of umbrellas, like, almost like paper cocktail umbrellas that are kind of stuck into each one going all the way up the center of the building. And then the outside is glass, and then the paneling, instead of putting actual solid bricks or even solid building materials there, because the building is so tall, they had to make it very light. They filled the foot or so space in between the drywall that they put up in this building. Now, we're talking 220 stories of drywall that is filled with asbestos foam from the 1970s. Because remember, this thing was built in the 70s. It was, I think they started in 73. They opened it in 75. They finished it in 77. And when these buildings collapsed, that gigantic white cloud that you saw is a humongous cloud of asbestos. And it's one of the things that the news is not really telling you about.
I heard a couple of statements on the news, very small statements early on about the health hazards of that cloud, and they tried to reassure people, I think. But I haven't heard a doggone thing since.
Well, that entire cloud that you see is not only the concrete from the building, but is the drywall and is the asbestos that actually was filling the drywall in that building.
So you think there will be repercussions?
Oh, yeah, and because that means, I mean, this stuff, once you get asbestos in your lungs, it's one of the reasons why there's been this gigantic campaign to remove it from buildings. It's like fiberglass. It causes cancer, lung cancer, emphysema, totally wipes out the cilia in the upper part of your lungs, which now makes you far more susceptible to any sort of flu virus that's introduced or any sort of plague or whatever they might introduce into the New York population. But that gigantic cloud, with everybody coughing and hacking and the rescue workers wearing these masks, and everybody in New York now having to wear these, the smart people anyway, having to wear these surgical masks over their faces, because that asbestos is all over everything now, creating a cloud literally hundreds of miles wide that was visible from space when the buildings, in fact, collapsed in on themselves. And there was a theory, too, and I just thought this was worth mentioning kind of in a debunking aspect of this. There were a lot of people, and there was a lot of noise going around on the Internet that there were a series of bombs that actually took out the building. And I looked at, I got a friend of mine to get me all the stuff from ABC, and I looked and I looked and I looked, and to me, if you've actually been in those buildings, you know how crummy they're built. The way they collapsed in on themselves, they were designed to contract literally like that, to fall like a wedding cake on a hot summer day, so that the buildings themselves would implode, if you will, in that layered fashion. And this is...
Well, what I heard, Sean, is the following, that the collapse was inevitable. Crashing a jet without much fuel into the buildings eventually created a temperature of 800 degrees centigrade, and once that was achieved, the metal melted and the collapse took place. It was absolutely inevitable.
And collapsed in on itself. But the horrific brilliance of the terrorist plan was, if you'll notice, that the one plane crashed into the World Trade Center from the east, and the other plane crashed into the second World Trade Center from the west, because the idea what they were trying to do was actually knock the buildings over so that the buildings would actually fall over, and they didn't. They actually then imploded in on themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I might add, because had those buildings actually fallen over the way the terrorists expected them to be, you would not be talking about 6,000 people dead or missing now. You'd be talking about tens of thousands. And, it was a stroke of luck that the buildings actually did collapse and implode.
In on themselves
the way they did.
All right, so when will these health effects begin to be realized?
Well, you're starting to see some of them now. And I think the only lucky part about this was that it started to rain and there was a wind that actually began to blow most of the asbestos offshore. So, but I think that the health effects, because now that stuff's in the water, it's on everything in New York. I mean, as I said, this white cloud of snow, for lack of a better term, might as well have been some kind of chemical or biological attack, because the toxins that were released from the building materials in 220 stories of the tallest twin towers on Earth, that spread across a city of 8 million people. And, remember, everybody's so condensed. I mean, the Isle of Manhattan is, 3 miles across and, 10 miles long? And,
sure.
And, and of course, then the neighboring boroughs of New Jersey. And I have no doubt that now the asbestos has probably gotten into the food supply, the water supply. I think the next big problem that you're going to have is going to be the water supply in New York City, because all this stuff probably went right into the reservoirs in Central Park. That's the next big challenge that the people of New York are going to face, is what are they going to do about this poison that's now basically inundated everything.
All right, let's talk about future threats. We've all seen what's happened in New York and the Pentagon. What other cities might be, in your estimation, the most immediate danger?
Well, here's what I found to be the interesting thing about this, is that on the one hand, I got the feeling, living here in California, that when all of this happened, you saw Gray Davis up on the TV, and I'm not sure if you saw a lot of stuff that's happening in California, but was I almost got the feeling California felt left out, like we weren't important enough to attack or something. I hear all this ridiculousness about, oh, they're going to move the Academy Awards. The Academy Awards is going to be kept in a secret location now. I'm just not sure what they can attack in California if it's not, what are they going to do, hijack a Universal Studios tram and run over Steven Spielberg? We just don't have that much of, I guess, political importance here outside of the World Trade Center, which would be, you know, the financial capital of the world, and, of course, the Pentagon representing the military might of the United States.
Of course.
The two things that I thought were, and I don't want to get into this whole thing because you have much better Nostradamus experts on here than I, but we found three quatrains in a row in the Nostradamus centuries that I think are very interesting, and I'm just going to gloss these over. I'm not going to go in essence of what this all is because I put this in the newsletter.
Yeah, go ahead.
The first one, and of course you've got the King of Terror prophecy, you know, seventh month, 1999, from the sky will come the great King of Terror, bringing back to life the King of the Mongols before and after Mars reigns happily. It's possible. There was a debate amongst Nostradamus scholars that 1999 could have in fact been the year 2000 because Nostradamus was working on the Gregorian calendar,
right,
and it was switched to the Julian calendar. And it was 1999, which could have been the year 2000, and plus 7 months, or including the seventh month, or Septuagint, meaning September. So just to gloss through this, the one that we found that I thought was the most interesting was the quatrain that we felt predicted this. And this is one of the strange things I don't think anybody's noticed about the quatrains, is that whenever there's a series of wars or conflicts or battles, Nostradamus seems to group them together. And for those of you who are fans of this, if you take out maybe a Nostradamus book that you've got, and you check out Century 8, 20. The verse is, it reads, the false message about the sham election to run through the city, peace, or should I say to run through the city, peace broken, stopped, voice bought, chapel stained with blood, and to another one the empire contracted. This was interesting, and I wrote a whole write-up on this in the newsletter, so I'm
the
not going to...
The empire contracted.
The empire contracted. Interesting. The false message about the sham election. It is unusual because that points to a time frame because New York City was having a primary election, that day being Tuesday. There were a series of announcements about the primary election, and you can call it a sham election because nobody's really elected. It's just a primary to sort of weed out the sham candidates, you know, Joe Blow, who runs on the peace and shopping cart party or whatever. So you have your two big main front runners, made announcements about the election, and then, of course, opened the polls, then closed the polls and threw out all the votes to have the primary election again because of the attack. But it could just as easily describe the election of 2000, the presidential election.
It could.
That you had a false message that went out about the election, which was that Gore had won the election, and then, of course, what Nostradamus would describe as the sham election afterwards, the two sides fighting back and forth with an eventual decision by the Supreme Court, could be a timeline.
Well, when you first said that, that's what came to mind for me.
So here's the next line. Two, run through the city, peace broken, stopped. Interestingly enough, if you use David Ovison's green language and the decoding of Nostradamus, you can actually read two or T-O as T-W-O, and in the French you can actually read run as fly. So you can actually have two as in 1-2, fly through the city, peace broken, stop. That's exactly what happened. It broke the peace of the United States. It in fact broke the building. It broke many of our peace treaties with countries around the world because now we're going to war with these countries and parking our troops in these treaties. In these countries. The third line, and as I said, I'm just glossing through this. I did a whole analysis of this in the newsletter. Voice bought, chapel stained with blood. It is unusual because it's actually vox ace. Voice bought means a captured voice. And one of the things we're going to find is eventually we'll find the black boxes of the airliners to find out specifically what went on. We tracked survivors from recordings from cell phones. We're in the process now of using Echelon and Carnivore from the National Security Agency to now track down the cell phone communications, so literally by captured voices.
I bet they are.
And here's the chapel stained with blood. Unusual because chap actually in Old English means a merchant center. In French, it's actually chapelle, which is disang, chapelle, taint. It is interesting because taint is another word for infamy. So when you talk about the chapel being stained with blood, they're talking about the tower or a spire that seems to be a mercantile center being stained with blood. Another word for taint is infamy, America's second day of infamy. And this is probably the most interesting part of the line. At the very end, the actual French reads, "Et un autre l'empire contracte." And it is unusual that the word, the first word is "eta," in other words, E-T-A. Mm-hmm. And if you will notice, the guy that many believe was the mastermind, and certainly the man who was the most adept pilot, and the one who actually flew Flight 11 that crashed in the first World Trade Center, his name was Mohammed Atta.
That's right.
So we actually have a clue to the name of one of the terrorists in the line. And then when it says, and to another one, which means, once again, going back to two, the empire contracted. Very interesting line, because that comes right out of CNN, saying that the buildings contracted in upon themselves. New York is, of course, the empire city. New York is actually the empire state. And the building itself did contract. It didn't fall over. It contracted in upon itself. So I think this is revolutionary, and this is the first time this has ever been, ever been spoken of.
We will have everybody running to their books
to check
this out.
Here's the future now. The verses directly after that, and as I said, I'm just an amateur at this. Robert Egan is much better than I am. We've gone through these verses, and we picked out things that we thought were interesting.
No, proceed.
John Hogue will probably tear me to shreds, but, I'm not a professional at this. I'm just a talented amateur. The very next verse is, now we're in century 820. It's also unusual, too, that it was 8 o'clock when this all happened, and, there were two towers, what have you. Century 821 is actually three foists will enter the port of Agde, carrying the infection, not faith, but pestilence. Passing the bridge, they will carry off millions, and to break the bridge resistance by a third. Now, three foists, the actual word for foist, it's actually a port, and this is not a quatrain that's ever been analyzed. Not David Ovitson, not anybody has ever made sense of this quatrain. The actual city, which is Agde, is this little crummy little port in France that nobody thinks is of any significance. But if you use David Ovitson's green language, and as I said, let me just magically transform this. We think that this means three, and the word foist either means trucks, cargo containers, could also mean three men driving trucks, will enter the port of Agde, and if you actually take the day, it comes out to Day Ange. We actually translated this to mean the port of Los Angeles. And the port of Los Angeles, interestingly enough, is San Pedro, or St. Peter, quite literally. And there is a gigantic bridge that stretches directly across to the port of San Pedro, which is the port of Los Angeles. Downtown L.A. has like a tentacle that goes through the Watts Corridor, down the 110 freeway, and just kind of wraps around the port of Los Angeles.
So you're saying there's going to be an attack, if this is interpreted correctly, on Los Angeles?
In Los Angeles, carrying an infection... not faith, in other words, Muslims, I believe, but pestilence, carrying pestilence, passing the bridge, and the word carry off millions, to carry somebody off in the old Tate, in the plague times of Nostradamus,
right,
was someone who had the plague, you carted them off.
Sean, hold it
okay. Right
there. Oh, my. All right. Bottom of the hour. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM, raging through the nighttime. Sean David Morton is my guest. That MSNBC has on right now, and bear in mind, this may or may not be true, but the report is Afghans arrest 5 U.S. scouts. From Dubai, September 29th, Qatar's Al Jazeera television said on Saturday that Afghan security forces near the border with Iran had arrested 5 members of American special forces who were carrying maps of sites related to Osama bin Laden's group. And it goes on from there, but remember, this is a military source from bin Laden's Al-Qaeda group mentioning this or reporting this, and MSNBC reporting it. They're trying to confirm that right now. If you want to see the reports, you can go to my site, artbell.com. And if you click on what's new and then related links, that sort of thing, I think it says up at the top, the very top, it says news and other websites. Click on that. You'll be able to read the entire story from MSNBC. But at this hour, just reporting to you that MSNBC has, in fact, said that. We'll be right back. All right, here we go once again with Sean David Morton. As long as we're in the area of symbology, which I guess can loosely be said to be true with Nostradamus as we interpret, I've had no less than, I don't know, 10,000 emails on the symbology involved with the number 11. And so I thought I would ask you about this, Sean. Millions of emails on it.
Well, then you're probably familiar with, you've probably already got everything that has to do with the number 11 and how the number 11 was directly related to the attacks themselves. Numerologically, it breaks down in a couple of different ways, and of course, everybody's on the internet has heard this now. But of course, 911, you know, 9 + 1 + 1 is 11. 911 is the National Numeric Code for Emergency. Flight 11 was the number of the first plane to hit the World Trade Center on September 11th. The WTC towers have 110 floors. As you can see, it's 11. Flight 175 was the number of the second plane to hit the second World Trade Center tower. Actually, it's kind of odd because 1975 was the opening of the World Trade Center. There's 75 in both numbers. Flight 77 was the number of the plane that hit the Pentagon. The World Trade Center was actually completed in 1977. 77 in both numbers. 7 plus 7 is 14. 1 plus 4 is 5, numerologically. And, of course, the Pentagon is a gigantic five-sided structure. Flight 93 did not hit its target, which many believed was the White House.
Yes, I believe that.
They say that heroic passengers overcame the terrorists and crashed the plane into Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
We know that for a fact, actually.
1993 was the failed basement bombing of the World Trade Center. So it's interesting that Flight 93 also failed to hit its target, and 1993 was the failed bombing of the World Trade Center. Couple of interesting things, if I can just comment on the Shanksville thing. The only, like I said, I've been looking for holes in the stories, and the one thing I can really say about the coverage of this is that the coverage of the World Trade Center bombing, of all the stuff that I've seen in the press, was completely different from the point of view of the openness of the press, from interviewing eyewitnesses, from getting eyewitness video up. A very, how can I say, populist response that was totally different from the media's coverage, I might add, of TWA Flight 800, where witnesses were treated as either crazy or maniacs, and people with physical evidence who saw a missile hitting the plane were, you know, were called nuts and bonkers and arrested by the government.
You bet.
Completely different from the coverage of the Oklahoma City bombing, where the story changed like every 5 minutes. First it's a brown car, then it's a van, then it's a truck, then it's five guys, now it's one guy, then two explosions. So this one was very open in a lot of different ways, which you know, points to me that, you know, there's a lot of people saying, oh, maybe the government was behind this. You know, I don't think so. I don't think that they would blow up a financial center. I mean, they would probably hit something symbolic that didn't really strike at the heart of the, you know, the world global banking system.
No, I don't buy into that at all.
The one thing that I think is interesting, and this is the one series of things that don't make a lot of sense and I think might come out, is I watched Peter Jennings and then Dan Rather report, and this is, and then they interviewed some of the people who were actually in contact with the many heroic people who overpowered the hijackers on Flight 93. But there were numerous reports that were only reported about once and were never repeated that the wing had actually caught fire. And the way the plane went down was that one of the wings seemed to have been sheared off at the tip. And instead of the plane actually coming down on its belly and leaving a large field of debris. The plane actually began to spiral downwards in like a 360-degree nosedive, exactly the way it would happen if one of the wings had actually been damaged or had been blown off. And I think that in all the conspiracy theories that are out there, the best one that I've seen where the evidence actually does show up is that at whatever point these passengers managed to overpower the terrorists, I think that somebody took a shot at that plane, and that when the passengers were told that the three other planes had already been crashed into the Pentagon and the World Trade Centers, and they then decided to take back the plane, I believe that jets were actually scrambled, that they took a shot at the wing of the plane, assuming, because there was no communication with the plane, that if a skilled pilot was still at the helm, that he would be able to land the plane. But that's the only thing that really irks me, is that I do think that Flight 93 quite conceivably was not blown out of the sky, but nicked, shall we say, probably by fighter jets who had figured out by that time that this plane was way off course and was quite conceivably heading towards the White House.
Well, you know, the government admitted that they had given permission from the president, as a matter of fact, although that's been now generals can make that call. But the president, in fact, did give permission for that plane to be shot down. But the fighter jets, according to the government, did not get close enough to do it.
That's the only part of this whole story I don't believe, because why would the wing catch fire? The terrorists would have no way to blow up the wing of the plane or to catch fire, or it was reported twice on two separate news mediums and also from witnesses who were hearing from people inside the plane that the right wing of the plane was actually on fire, that the tip of the wing was on fire. Mm-hmm. And it was the one thing that I heard once and then didn't hear again. And
yeah, I've not heard it myself.
My ears kind of perk up when I hear these weird kind of anomalies that don't make any sense. So here's the other thing. I just wanted to get into the rest of the 11 symbology.
Sure, go ahead.
The most interesting thing about this for people that are into occult sciences is that if you look at the tarot card of the tower, specifically like in the Rider-Waite deck or the Toth-Crowley deck, it's really eerie. It's the 16th deck in the tarot, the 16th card in the tarot. But if you actually look at the tower itself, the tower in that card is standing on top of an island, exactly like the island of Manhattan. There is a lightning bolt that is actually coming down from the sky. The crown on the top of the building is actually falling off to the left, exactly like the first World Trade Center. The top of the World Trade Center fell to the left. There are wealthy merchants in their rich red cloaks actually hurling themselves from the windows of the building, all in the tower card, that relate to the destruction of the Tower of Babel.
God, I've never seen that.
By God. I'm sure Ramona or somebody might have some tarot cards lying around somewhere.
The 16th tarot card, huh?
The 16th tarot card. Look at the tower, because that's the destruction of the Tower of Babel, and it looks like a photograph off CNN. I mean, it'll freak you out when you take a look at the card.
You depend on it. I certainly will.
Here's what's weird. A lot of people were saying to me, well, why New York? Of course, I live in Los Angeles, where everybody's pretty dirt ignorant. it's not happening within arm's reach or 5 miles where they happen to be sitting. It doesn't exist in the universe. And they're like, why do they hate New York? I don't understand why the Islamic fundamentalists are going after New York. Why the World Trade Center?
And that's easy. It's the center of the financial universe.
Exactly. But to them, in Islam, it represents the Tower of Babel. And the Tower of Babel specifically, if you actually look in the Old Testament, the Tower of Babel was built by the sons of Noah, and this will blow you away. Okay, I hope we have enough time for this. The Tower of Babel was built by the sons of Noah, and of course they came to a land that was called Shinar, biblically, and they each said to their neighbor, come let us work and make bricks, and they agreed, and I'll give you the quote from the Bible, we will build here for ourselves a city and a tower whose top shall scrape the sky, which is where we get the word skyscrapers from,
right?
Or whose top will reach unto heaven, and thus we will make a beacon or a name for ourselves so that we may not be scattered all over the surface of the country. In other words, something tall enough that we'll know it, we'll see it, it'll be impressive enough, everybody will be drawn to it. And, of course, the Tower of Babel was a mercantile banking center. Now, the number 11 directly connects in to the Babylonian banking system, because in ancient Babylon they basically invented the concept of usury, of interest banking. And in the Babylonian system, you would loan 10 coins and get 11 coins back. And that's where the number 11 comes in, representing the Babylonian banking system, because the 11th coin, or 10%, represented the payment of interest on debt.
Known in modern times as a vig.
As a what? I'm sorry.
The VIG. I think they call it the
VIG. Yeah, the VIG, or yeah, the Ponzi, or whatever, the Ponzi.
Yeah, that's right.
But the 11th coin, which is the payment, the beginning of the Babylonian system, is forbidden. I mean, expressly by God in the Old Testament. It's forbidden by Moses. There's a reason why Jesus drove the money changers out of the temple. Of course, Muhammad strictly forbids it, and they practice no interest banking in Iran or any of the fundamentalist countries. Now, here's what's interesting, though. Here's the caveat, is that if you were a Hebrew or a Muslim, you could loan money at interest to an infidel, to somebody who was not of your race or not of your religion,
mm-hmm.
because it was considered a way to enslave that person by loaning the money at interest. So here they build the Tower of Babel, and the Lord comes along and scatters them over the surface of the whole country, and they abandon the building of the city. They therefore call its name Babel, which means confusion, because it was there that the Lord confused the designs of the country, and thus from there the Lord scattered them all over the surface of the land, and that's directly out of Genesis chapter 11.
Right.
Now, here's the creepy part that really freaks me out, is that I'm looking at it going, okay, the land of Shinar is where the first
We interrupt this program to bring you breaking news on Austin's news leader, News Radio 590, KLBJ.
The U.S. thinks an Algerian pilot had a link to the Pentagon attack. Prosecutors at an extradition hearing alleged the 27-year-old Lofty Raisi, an Algerian pilot living close to London's Heathrow Airport, instructed four of the hijackers who crashed a plane into the Pentagon. The U.S. is seeking Raisi's extradition. He's one of at least 20 people arrested in Europe as part of the crackdown on terrorists. Former British intelligence officer Charles Showbridge says he is not shocked that Raisi was living in Britain.
I would be surprised if it were to be the case that Britain in some way were not involved in the harboring and facilitating of those people involved in the attacks. This has been the case in the past. A number of friendly Muslim countries have for a long time been asking for the government to take a more firm line against such people.
And the rulers in Afghanistan, the Taliban, continue to be defiant this morning. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
When news breaks out, we break in on Austin's news leader, News Radio 590 KLBJ. Now, back to our show in progress.
The American mind, which is ruled by the rising sign Gemini, the rising sign of the USA, the twins, two towers, whose very symbol is the number 11. The symbol for Gemini is the two towers. And 11 embraces the opposites of both heaven and hell. The two towers before the entrance of every mystery temple, especially the Masons, are synonymous with the power and purpose of 11. And 11 is kind of interesting, too, because hidden, it means things that are hidden and revealed, illumination which the spirit gains through sorrow. And there's one other unusual thing about the symbology of everything that's going on here. At the same time, the Trade Center towers attacked. The moon was actually moving into, or had moved into, Cancer. And it was actually activating not only the June 6, 1946 birth date of George Bush, but was also activating the solar eclipses that occurred in July. And even the mountain astrologer was saying that this particular day, September 11th, is going to be noticed for something incredible that's going to happen across the world with the activation of this particular eclipse. Now,
listen, before we'll get back to this in a moment. Sean, you write all of this in your newsletter, and I want to give you a chance in the early hours still to plug your newsletter.
Okay.
So if you folks would like to receive the Delphi Associates newsletter, here's how you do it. Sean?
Okay, our order line, this is all on the donation basis. Our order line is 888-452-7999. It's a real easy number to remember. The order line is 24 hours. We've got operators standing by right now. If you jam up the lines, it actually it jumps over to another service, so you can call in right now. It's 888-452-7999. 888-452-7999.
It's open now?
Yeah, it's open now. It's a 24-hour credit card order line.
Okay.
888-452-7999. You can go to the website and order it off the website at www.delphiassociates.org.
And we've got a link.
You've got a link on the webpage. We've got a special that we're running tonight. It's $60 for 12 issues. And if you want to buy 2 years, we're going to give it to you for $99. So you save $21 off it. They'll also ask you if you would like it sent first class. It's an extra $12, actually, to send the send a magazine, first-class postage and handling. And that's pretty much it. It's PRI. You're going to make your check out to the Prophecy Research Institute or your credit card. And it's we're a 501c3 nonprofit religious educational organization. So any monies that you spend for your subscription or your materials are all tax deductible. So there you go. The order line is 888. It's real easy. 452-7999. Go to the website. You can order it at DelphiAssociates.org. And if you would just like to send us a good old-fashioned check, just make it out to PRI, which is the Prophecy Research Institute. And you can mail it to us here at 2207 Hermosa Avenue. That's 2207 Hermosa, H-E-R-M-O-S-A, Avenue. And that's in Hermosa Beach, California, 90254. 2207 Hermosa Avenue, Hermosa Beach, California, 90254. And as I said, the special we're running is $60 for 12 issues and $99 for 24 issues.
All right.
Which is $21 savings.
All right. Sean, in the last, couple of weeks now, our son has been doing, berserk. I'm telling you, I've been putting daily photographs on my website of what the sun looks like. It is so littered with gigantic sunspots right now. We were supposed to have passed the peak, according to NASA, of this sunspot cycle 23 some time ago. Obviously, we haven't. It's peaking even higher right now.
I think we were supposed to be last year, I think, when this was all going to go on.
What is going on?
Well, isn't it unusual that it's actually anything weird that happens as far as cycles? 23 is a very odd mystical number. And this was why, let me throw this in, where I was just completely stumped on a lot of things this year. The stock market, as you know, goes by solar cycles, because I think that it triggers, and I think a lot of the war and a lot of what's happening right now is whenever the sun goes crazy like this, it triggers the limbic system, which is the reptilian mind, if you will, that only operates on fight, flight, or sex.
Sure.
Can I eat it? Can I run away from it, or can I have sex with it? Those are basically the three main instincts that, you know, which is what the markets run off to. I don't know about the sex part, but you know what I call the three F's, but I won't get into that.
Thank you.
Fight, flight, or
yes,
fun.
Yes.
So when the sun goes crazy like this, it begins to do a number of different things. And when I look at the stock market and I look at the solar cycles, when I made my last prediction, a couple of predictions on your show, this is the one in March, where I talked about the stock market nosediving to, the NASDAQ nosediving to under 1,700, and it went to like 1,634. And then I said on April 5th it was going to go to 1,789, and I think it rose up like 2 days later and went to 1,787, I think.
That's right.
On the 5th of April on your show, we had a gigantic solar flare that dove the NASDAQ, and then there was a huge quiet period on the sun, which is when the market then recovered. Now, I expected, logically, after this massive solar flare, because remember April was the, like, it went off the chart. It was like a Y1.
Oh, of course I remember. Sean, this is a great place to hang people up, so I'm going to do exactly that. We're at the top of the hour. Sean David Morton will be right back, and we'll talk the stock market and the sun.
I've been drifting on the sea of heartbreak, trying to get myself ashore for so long.
Directly affecting the markets themselves. So the bottom line here is that I thought that the markets would drop drastically, that they would then spike through the summer. In other words, go down in July, spike in late July through August, and then directly after Labor Day begin to tumble. And pretty much the same thing I predicted last year. It seems, and now they're even saying in the market, you know, in October, it's just like it's like Thanksgiving. It's a tradition that the markets tumble.
That's right.
We talked about this as far back as December, saying if, you know...
So then how is this October going to be?
Well, this one, you know, I think you've already seen. I mean, you've already seen with what's happening with the World Trade Center now. Today is the end of the third quarter. And my last prediction, when I revamped my predictions and basically said in the August newsletter, look, you know, I tanked on the market this summer because I thought the whole thing was going to spike. The only thing I got right was the NASDAQ. So I told everybody that through the summer, the NASDAQ specifically, and I'll actually read it. My feeling is that it should hit 2,000 again in 2 weeks into May. This is the April 2001 newsletter. 2 weeks into May, it will then zigzag from the two red channel lines of the NASDAQ charts played on the page between 2,000 and 2,395, which is exactly what the NASDAQ did. It basically skittered in a crab-like motion between about 2,000 and 2,300 all summer.
Right, right.
And then I said in August, this was August 25th, I said the drop is going to be that the NASDAQ is going to plummet to 1,500, and it's in the August newsletter that was published the 25th of August, and that I saw Dow Jones going to, I had two scenarios for it, but I'll go with the one that I printed. I said it was going to drop to between 9,000 and 9,200. In one email, I wrote a guy and said, you know, it's 88 to 9,200 or so, and that's what the Dow Jones is at now. It's 88, 47, 80. It's at the end of the third quarter. The market has spiked substantially. It actually rose at 600 points, you know, because it flooded about 600 points all the way through this. We still got a big pitch in the NASDAQ that's coming again in October, and I still think you're going to see the NASDAQ go as low as about 1,034.51, that it may actually drop another 400 points or so, because the technology stock completely in the tank. The biggest thing, and you're going to see this, that Boeing has already laid off a few thousand people or so, and Boeing is going to lay off probably another, I would say, anywhere between 2,000 and as many 10,000 people right at Christmas. That's going to be a big news story around Christmas time. I still think that the consumer confidence is going to be up because I think that America's come together enough as a concerned family that I think that after seeing a tragedy like we've seen, that we're really grateful to have the people we love around. And I think that people are going to be spending this Christmas and not in air travel. I think they're going to be driving and taking buses and trains. But there's a lot of money to be made right now because I think the market with the Dow Jones, I don't see the Dow Jones going any lower than, I would say, worst case scenario. And this is what I said all the way back in April when I said that there were three scenarios for the Dow that would be 85.64, and of course today it was 88.47, 7,7104 or 8,003, and those were pretty much my bottom lines. And I think we bottomed out now. I think this is the end of the third quarter. If you've got money to spend, I think we've reached the bottom. As far as the Dow Jones goes, the line going to, I don't think, any lower than about 8,500, best guesstimate right now. With the NASDAQ not dropping any lower than, like I said, 1,000, that's still a substantial drop.
That's
still
pretty bad,
yeah. November.
It's pretty bad.
But look at it this way. I hate to say this, but, when we're going over to other countries and basically bombing countries into cat box litter, it's good for economy. You know, as long as we're blowing people into little itty-bitty pieces, the economy seems to feed on blood. And one of the things I was recommending, if you have the stomach for it, last year I said, "Look, we're going to be."
I don't think I want to go there.
Well, just blood stocks, you know, which are TRW, Raytheon, cruise missiles, all that kind of thing. Is you can say it's defense technologies, you will.
Oh, I thought we were going into the presidential person.
No. I was going into defense technologies as being the place that, you know, if you got the stomach for it, that they're going to be building obviously a lot of cruise missiles. They're going to be building a lot of jets. That's TRW, that's Hughes, that's Raytheon.
Sure, sure.
Raytheon makes satellite dishes, they make cruise missiles. All the stuff that's within about a 10-mile radius of where I happen to be sitting right here, the Valley of Death, right over here in Manhattan Beach and the edge of Hermosa Beach. Here's the good news. The good news is that I think that after you see consumer confidence will begin to rise after, I think, the 16th of October, 15th, 16th of October, which is when this gigantic offensive is going to begin. And once we start booking some wins, if you will, because the American people just feel we're frightened, we're scared of our own shadows, we're defeated, we've been in a fight, we've been punched in the nose, we've been knocked down, we're flat on our butts, and we need a victory. And I think that it's going to happen with the war that's about to see, this rather extended conflict, beginning in October is actually going to pick up people's spirits, and, you know, if blowing people to smithereens can do that. And I said that after Labor Day that the economy was going to tank, that everything was going to go flat, and that we'd actually then see the economy begin to pick up in 2002. Numerologically speaking, 2001 is a three-year, which are always unstable economically. 2002 is a four-year, which means that there's a whole set of technologies that are about to be released. a whole new set of energy technologies that are based on fuel cells, cold fusion.
That'll all bode well for the NASDAQ, of course.
All stuff that's going to come up, and I think the next advances in chip technology. It's always been a new chip, you know, Moore's Law, that every 18 months or so that chips will expand exponentially as far as their memory.
That's still holding true.
Yeah, but the problem with technology is it's gotten smarter than the people using it. I mean, you know, how many copies of Adobe Photoshop do you really need? I mean, you know, it goes up to 6 and 6.5 and 7. I mean, you know, I get them all because I write and publish the newsletter on them. I have to have the, you know, and you know how it is.
Latest and greatest.
We're in the media business, so we have to have that kind of stuff. But, you know, do I really need another Mac G5 computer that's 1,000 megahertz instead of 500? And, you know, I could barely program my VCR now, much less, you know, a new computer where I got to learn a new program. So it's pretty much outstripped the usefulness of people using it. So the next step is going to be the miniaturization of these devices, handheld devices, belt devices. The wave that computers is going to take is going to be holographic in nature, which means that you're going to actually see circular computers look like little flying saucers. They're literally going to look like Discman, like CD players that are going to be round because the information is actually going to rotate in almost a holographic pattern, like a cyclotron, if you will. And the biggest thing is going to be, and this is for computer geeks and nerds out there, that they're going to actually take central processing time and memory time and link the two together, because all the delays actually come from your central processor, not your memory, which is very, very large. So it's going to be interesting to see these wearable computer devices that you'll be able to actually hook onto your belt that'll be, you know, a few gigs of memory that you can then control with like a monocle or an eyepiece or a pair of glasses that you can actually wear, and then use a ring or, you know, some sort of handheld device or pointer as an actual mouse and be able to wear this around. And, you know, you think you got problems with the blonde in front of you in the car trying to put her lipstick on. You can imagine, you know, the computer geeks downloading pictures of Sarah Michelle Gellar in their cars.
Good luck to us. Yeah, good luck to us.
So the technology sector is going to start to pick up in 2002 with a whole new series of introductions. I've been saying this for a while. Once again, the broadband speeds are going to increase exponentially. Technology they don't quite have their handle on yet. I mentioned a couple of companies on the show last year that did well when I originally talked about it, like 6 cents a share, and then they went up to about 52, and they're back down to about 18 or so.
Right.
Even with the collapse.
Well, you'd still be happy with that. You'd done it then. Listen, we've got a break here,
okay.
And then when we come back, I want to take a few phone calls. All
right. That's great. Now, are we ending at 2, or it's a short show? Right,
no, yeah. And 2. So I want to take a few phone calls.
Okay.
All right. Sean David Morton is my guest, and yes, we are ending at 2. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This is Coast to Coast AM.
Mean equilibrium, 11 being the number of the banking system, you know, and specifically it just always represented, you know, all Masonic lodges have these two towers directly in front of them. It's in the Masonic number code as represents Gemini, black and white, truth, latent, active, hidden and revealed, illumination, which the spirit gains through sorrow. It just has to do with a lot of Masonic numerology, the 11s. And then I was relating the 11s also to the Babylonian banking system, and that the World Trade Centers represent the tower or towers of Babylon.
Okay, and Art, you just said you're a Mason?
No, I said a lot of people say I'm a Mason.
Oh,
I didn't say I was one.
Okay.
I said I was a Gemini.
Oh, okay.
All right,
thank you.
Thank you very much. Take care. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Sean David Morton. Art Bell, hello.
Good morning, Art. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good, thank
good.
You.
Good. This is Gail in Temecula. Listen to you on 60 KFI.
That's the one.
My favorite station.
And I'm also a Gemini.
All right.
But what was really strange is I dug out a couple of my sets of tarot cards, and I found I had one that was designed by Salvador Dali. And his tower has a great big piece or a chunk out of it with people, with a person falling out of it. But above that is a crescent moon.
Ooh.
And that was the same way it was the morning of the attack, because I went out to feed my horses. I thought there was a crescent moon, so I came in and I threw a chart for New York at the time of trying to figure out if there was some correlation with the stars the way they were that day at that time over New York, and of course not that great at deciphering.
Well, but what's the symbol of Islam?
The crescent moon, exactly. That
That's
was my
right.
question.
That's right. And
I had noticed that it looked like there was Mars that was very, very close to it that night.
That's right.
And, of course, Mars being the planet of war, and how all of this tied in. You know, if somebody could decipher a little bit more about the tarot cards or the chart for New York over that particular day, I thought it would be particularly interesting.
As I was saying before, you had the moon, which was just moving into Cancer, which every astrological magazine was saying this conjunction with Cancer moving in, and it moved in literally about 15 minutes before the actual attack happened, which activated the solar eclipse of July.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, remember, George Bush is a Cancer. So his July 6th of 1946. So there were two eclipses, a solar and lunar eclipse in July, kind of crucifying George Bush in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, activating his chart. I mean, one of the things that I was saying that I said on Art's program all the way back in March is I told you that George Bush was going to become one of the most popular presidents in U.S. history. And, of course, so it's all these things that were true on Monday that weren't true on Tuesday. On Monday, we had a multi-billion-dollar surplus. No more. On Monday, we were trying to cut the Pentagon's budget by $20 billion. Well, that's not happening.
It's all true.
On Monday, Social Security was going to get to lockbox. That's not going to happen. On Monday, everybody thought George Bush, you know, was a rich kid who may have been a village idiot who has now got a 91% approval rating, higher than any president in U.S. history, and he hasn't even done anything yet.
Do you think that countries fall under particularly bad horoscopes?
Absolutely.
Because I've thrown a lot of charts for people that are born in New York, and they have particularly good charts. And I've never thrown one for anyone that's been in Afghanistan. Ever since I would love to throw, you know, Bin Laden. No one seems to really know when he was born.
March 10th, 1957.
No kidding.
As I understand it, I think. There's two different dates that are given for him. But I believe it's March 10th, 1957.
Interesting. If anyone could find out the time, but I mean, that was close enough just to see, because I track a lot of them.
Do a chart and let me know.
It'd be really interesting, because mine shows, you know, I'm showing that I have a violent death, so I'm just waiting for that to happen.
Well, Bin Laden's born in, he was born in Jeddah, I believe, in Saudi Arabia, and he was the 17th child of 57 kids.
Or 14th of 20 of 54, I heard today.
You've got the place and the date and the time, so go work and send me a copy.
Okay, great. Thank you all.
Right, thank you. Take care. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with David Morton. Hi.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
This is Marcus from Kansas City.
Yes,
Marcus?
Sir.
Hey, I heard the guy talk about the birthday of Jesus Christ, and there's a book that states exactly, due to interpretation in Revelation chapter 12, that he was born on September 11th, 3 B.C.
No kidding.
Yeah, and the wind cloak of the sun would be sun in Virgo with the moon under her feet and a crown of 12 stars on her head, which would give you a very good star map of that day. And then I just like to make that. I thought it was very relevant. And I made the connection. I called a couple days after, talked to you, Art, between the seven buildings and the seven mountains, which...
And after
you mentioned stuff about the tarot cards, that just really gave me the willies.
Have you taken a look at the 16th card?
I haven't. I've seen it before, but I don't have a computer right here. So.
Oh, okay.
And I have some advice. I'm very sensitive, and I get waves of emotion all the time. I don't have a spleen. That might have something to do with it. But I've always been very sensitive. I'm not a psychic. I don't have premonitions. And for the past year, I've been suffering severe depression. And I sense every emotion. And I was wondering, can you have any advice on how I can deal with that?
That is the hardest thing. When I go out and I teach seminars to people, one of the things that I notice is that so many people that are coming up and developing their psychic powers and their psychic abilities, we really have no way in our culture to actually sublimate those. I mean, in any other culture, you'd be able to go somewhere and actually learn how to use and how to focus your own psychic power and your own psychic abilities. And there are very few conduits for that here. Some people turn to drugs and alcohol to actually numb their own psychic powers and abilities because they can't stand getting the input from other people. Is that the way you feel?
Apparently it is, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But yes, it's an overwhelming, truly overwhelming, just a blast of emotions coming out of him.
The idea is that the Buddhist idea is utter compassion but detachment, that you allow these things to move through your body and process them. One of the most valuable meditations is the violet fire meditation, where you actually process and transmute this energy into a golden light that is then processed to everyone else in the world. We only got about like 2 minutes left, don't we?
No, that's right. And I want to be able to plug Delphi Associates newsletter.
Just real quick, it's just the order line is 888-452-7999. We are running a special tonight. It's $60 for a 12-issue subscription for the newsletter. And if you order tonight, and if you order 2 years of the newsletter, we'll get to you for $99, which is $21 off. They'll also ask you if you would like to pay the extra for first-class delivery. The order line number is 888 888- 402-7999. You can also order off the website, which is at www.delphiassociates.org. So there you go, 888-452-7999. Just wanted to keep it real simple for you. They are standing by. It is a 24-hour credit card line. Or you can mail us a check at PRI, the Prophecy Research Institute, at 2207 Hermosa Avenue in Hermosa Beach, California, 90254. I think you'll love the newsletter. I think it's one of the best things out there. It's 16 pages, full color. I work real hard on it, and I've been doing it now for about 8 years. And,
all right.
Time for me to just kind of wrap things up. And
yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I just want to say to everybody out there that in the days and months to come, it's going to be very, very hard, particularly with the gentleman who just called, all you folks to keep the faith and to continue to hold your light high. And being on the path and being loving and kind and sensitive to the higher forces and energies is going to seem almost impossible in the maelstrom in which we seem to be constantly engulfed. And I believe that this is the great Exodus generation. It feels almost hopeless sometimes as we wander aimlessly through what appears to be a barren, parched desert of death and destruction. And it's difficult to remember that there is a promised land that awaits us all, and we must all keep the courage and strength and honor to build it ourselves once we get there, and to rebuild the world along the new paradigms of peace, charity, love, hope, and spiritual advancement for everyone. I don't want anybody out there to ever lose sight of the fact that there's a glory to the Creator, and there is an infinite plan, and there's an infinite wisdom to the universe in which we live, that there is a land of milk and honey.
All right, Fred, listen, we got to go. I'm going to be tapping you on the shoulder again very soon, okay. Sean, because there's so much going on.
All right, well, thank you so much, Art. It's always a pleasure and always an honor, and I hope you feel better, my friend.
Good night.
God bless America.
All right, that's Sean Denmorton, folks. Now, I'll be back Monday, take the weekend and nurse my back and turn upside down or do whatever. In the meantime, the high desert, ta-ta. Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm.